Shalom, friends. This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Jake Rubin. Welcome to MSU Hillel's The Weekly Kvetch. This podcast features news, interviews, and a whole lot of kvetching. So, I'm excited for you to join me and my trusty producers, Sophie and Nate, as we dive deep into all things Jewish.
Hello, and welcome back to yet another episode of The Weekly Kvetch. I remain your host, Jake Rubin, and alongside my producers, Sophie, Nate, and MSU Hillel, we are super excited to bring you a wonderful guest today, Rabbi Jen Lader from Temple Israel. It's going to be a really, really fun episode, and we can't wait to get this episode going. So, heck yeah, Weekly Kvetch, everybody, put on your hats, put on your yarmulkes. It's time. It's time to rock and roll.
Celebrate Hanukkah.
Put on your yarmulke. Oh, that's funny. Before we get started, we have a quick word from our sponsor.
The Weekly Kvetch is sponsored by MSU Hillel, the place to be for more than 3,500 Jewish students at MSU. The Weekly Kvetch is also sponsored by Israel, the land of milk and honey.
Okay, cool. Now we're going to move on to our next portion of the podcast. Let's give them something to kvetch about. Let's give them
something. Kvetch. Something. Kvetch. Kvetch.
So, Sophie, what are we kvetching about today?
Well, for Hillel, in this upcoming week, it will be Israel Week. Exciting. Ooh, stuff. Theme is around friends. I did the little design for them, the t-shirt design. Yeah. And so this week we are going to be talking about the Holy Land, the land of the milk and honey, Israel, Am Yisrael Chai, why we love it, because both Jake and I have been there multiple times, and we're just going to talk about what we love about Israel. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So, have you done Birthright yet?
I've done Birthright.
I also did Birthright. Birthright was a really, really cool experience. And I think that that's like one of the reasons, that's kind of like a way in which I saw Israel, and like for everything that it was beautiful. Like we went on hikes, we went kayaking, and went to, I can't remember the name of the city, but the one with the glass blowing. Do you know what I'm talking about? I think it's Sfat. I don't remember.
Maybe.
I
Nate
got
would
name.
Know.
I don't
Nate
know.
Nate is doing Nate yoga would right know. Now.
Dang it. Nate's not here right now. He's doing mountain goat with yoga. No, he's doing he's doing yoga on top of Mount Everest with a bunch of goats and goat children. So shout out to Nate and his goats. Birthright was a really cool way. I got sick on the bus a couple times, but it's kind of like one of the reasons why I love Israel is just because there's so many things to do, and it was just a really, really cool experience.
Yeah, no, I loved my Birthright trip, but I feel like my favorite trip to Israel was Teen Mission 2016, which I did go on with our lovely guest this week, Rabbi Jen Lader. It was a month in Israel, and we did so much that I never thought we'd be able to do. And I cherish that trip for everything. But Birthright is amazing too. Go on Birthright if you haven't gone on Birthright. Nate would want me to say that.
I think it's also very important to note that Sophie and I went on a trip to Israel together.
Yes.
Right after our bar and bat mitzvahs. It was a family mission trip.
Yes.
Throwback to that. That was a really, really fun time. We went with our families. We climbed Masada. That's really the only thing I remember.
We made some chocolate.
Yeah, we made chocolate. We had a silent disco party.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was a really fun time. And so I felt like I had to mention the fact that we were, in fact, in Israel at the same time.
Yeah. It was a great time.
I think another thing I love about Israel, I actually did after my Birthright, I studied abroad in Israel for like a month and a half. Mm-hmm. And I actually did a project about Israeli food. And Israeli food is, it's really, really interesting because it takes inspiration from like Egypt and like Asia, and they kind of like fuse it together to make their own cuisine.
Yeah.
It's really cool. You know, falafel, incredible. Hummus, incredible. You know.
What's your favorite?
I think my favorite, I have to go with falafel, because Israeli falafel, I haven't been able to find it, because it's like when I go to Middle Eastern restaurants, I think I get like different types of falafel, but Israel falafel. I need to find like an Israeli restaurant so I can get the actual Israeli falafel I like. I had the best hummus of my entire life. I went with my professor, Professor Yore. Shout out to Yore. He's the Hebrew professor here at Michigan State. We went to just a little place in Tel Aviv, and he's like, this hummus is going to change your life. And it did change my life. Hummus all the time.
I forgot there was one place that on Birthright I went to with Nate and some of my friends. It was in Haifa. I can't remember the name of it, but I'm going to ask Nate. And oh my God, this hummus shakshuka that I had. Oh, so good.
I like shakshuka. I mean, God. I kind of like shakshuka. I'm not a huge, like, what is it?
It's tomato person or egg person?
It's the tomatoes. I'm not a huge, huge tomato person. I tried it and I was like, but there's this place in next to Hebrew University in Jerusalem that had like a falafel, like pita, and I'd get that all the time. And so Israeli food, shout out to Israeli food. Shout out to Birthright. Shout out to I think the Dead Sea is worth mentioning.
Yeah.
The place on earth. And it's just cool. If you haven't been there, you go there and you lay back.
Float.
And you'll float. Yeah. People bring like lawn chairs and like they just sit and like read a magazine. It's really, really fun.
I feel like most people do that at a beach though.
I mean, you're right. But it's like they can go like far, far out and they can like still be.
Oh, like, oh, in the Dead Sea.
Like,
okay.
Yeah. Like in the, in, like, no, not on the sand, like actual in the sea. But also there's like the mud next to the Dead Sea. You'll see people like rubbing that all over. It's supposed to heal
you. It's great.
It is great.
Love the mud.
It's pretty cool. So shout out to Israel. Shout out to the Dead Sea. I love, it was a really cool time. They don't tell you though, very important fact, important fact about the Dead Sea. There are like, cause it's like very salty. There's salt rocks everywhere. So you got to wear sandals cause you'll stab your foot. I really, really hurt myself cause I was like, oh, I'll just walk in. No, pointy rocks everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I also can't go in with any cuts.
Yeah. Well, it'll heal you right up, but
for my ladies out there, you know, you can't, I'm not going to mention it, but if you know, you know.
I think I know, and I'm not even a lady. But I mean, there's just so many different cool things in Israel, the food, the people are nice, but they're very, I mean, they're nice. I love my Israelis.
Yes.
Shout out to Israelis.
Shout out to Israelis. Shout out to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa, Tiberias, the Dead Sea, Masada, the camels.
The camels. Camels.
The Bedouin tents.
The Bedouin tents were so much fun. They had like tea. And I think about that tea. That was really good tea. That was actually the first time I drank tea when I mean, I drank tea before, but like, it like opened my mind, you know.
Oh, okay.
The tea world, yeah. So there's so many different cool things about Israel. There's so many reasons to love Israel. I'm Yisrael Chai. There's just, you know, shout out to Israel. Thank you, Israel, for giving
beautiful land.
A place like us, we can call it home. It's like a home away from home.
Yes.
And so we say next year in Israel. Next year in Jerusalem. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Party together in person in Israel.
Now we're going to take to the streets again with our correspondent, Julia Brettschneider, to get the 411 on what everyone's favorite thing about Israel is.
Hey everyone, this is Julia, and I'm back again on the streets asking MSU Hillel students our toughest questions. Let's see if we can find any Hillel students today. Excuse me, what's your name?
Mel.
And what is your favorite thing about Israel?
I like the food in Israel.
Thanks. Excuse me, what's your name?
Sadie.
And what's your favorite thing about Israel?
Just the culture about everything there and the people.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Thank you. Excuse me, what's your name?
It's Aaron Rafelson.
And what is your favorite thing about Israel?
The food.
Thank you. Excuse me, what's your name?
Mallory Winnick.
And what is your favorite thing about Israel?
The people.
And can you elaborate on that?
Everyone?
No, we don't have time. What's your name?
Sam.
And what's your favorite thing about Israel?
Let me think about that. My favorite thing about Israel would have to be the Israeli drink Tubi.
Thank you. This has been Taking It to the Streets with Hillel. I'm still Julia, and I'll see you next time.
So, yeah, so that's our little something to fetch about, because it's very, very important to talk about Israel and how much we love it. So now we're going to move on to our actual interview. So take it away, Nate and Sophie.
Thanks, Jake. Now we have our interview portion of the podcast, where we are going to be interviewing the lovely Rabbi Jen Lader from Temple Israel of West Bloomfield, Michigan. Hey, Reb Jen, how are you?
Hey, Sophie, doing great. How are you?
I'm great. So to kick off the interview, for those who don't know who you are, could you please tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I am a rabbi at Temple Israel in West Bloomfield. We are the largest congregation in the country, and we have a really big, amazing team of clergy who work there. My specific portfolio involves all of our formal and informal Jewish education stuff for teens. So I run our youth group, I do our travel trips, I run all of our sort of post-B'nai Mitzvah to college program for our young people.
So Reb Jen, thanks for joining us. In thinking about being a rabbi, what was it that kind of brought you to wanting to become a rabbi? And were you always passionate about Judaism, or was there a specific experience or a couple of experiences that led you to the rabbinate?
That is a great question. I grew up in Austin, Texas. My path was always going to be to medical school. Since I was super little, I was fascinated by science. I went to magnet schools for science in middle school and high school. My dad's a scientist. Everybody in my family is a scientist or a doctor. And that was where I was going to. And I actually started university. My major was physiology and neurobiology at the University of Maryland. And despite the fact that I absolutely loved youth group growing up, and I was really involved in BBYO and my community at home, growing up in a tiny Jewish community, it just didn't seem like a reasonable option. It was like somebody saying I want to be a rabbi when I grow up was like somebody saying I want to be a superhero, or like I want to be a magical like fairy unicorn when I grow up. It like wasn't a real thing that I thought I could do. So, and I really never thought about it. But in my senior year of high school, I moved to Maryland from Texas. And all of a sudden I went from being like one of 10 Jewish kids that I knew to being like 25% of the population around me was Jewish. And I started taking classes to like learn more about real Judaism, not just sort of Sunday school, what I learned in an hour a week at synagogue. And I started working as a youth director at a really wonderful congregation in Bethesda. And it was through my youth director work, plus like studying Judaism for the first time in an academic way, that it's like my world broke open. And I started taking, like, in addition to organic chemistry and pathophysiology, I was taking women in Jewish literature and Jewish history and all of these amazing things that I had really never learned before. And then my advisor told me something brilliant. My college advisor, when I was like stressing about taking care of all my lab classes and also being able to take, you know, a billion credits of Hebrew. She said, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you need to do it for the rest of your life. And it really was this like moment of clarity for me that just because I loved science and just because I happened to be good at that didn't mean that that was what was going to make me happy in the long term. And so I made this decision to, you know, to sort of follow a dream, and the idea of living my life in one way, like not having a job and a passion and a community and like being separated by all three of those things, being able to do all of them and just sort of live my life that way, really opened a door for me. And I, to my parents' horror, decided to double major and ended with a Jewish studies degree and with a path to rabbinical school. And it's a decision that was incredibly difficult and one that I have regretted 0 days, 0 minutes of my life, because I really feel like this was the path to happiness and quality of life and feeling valued in the world around me.
Awesome. You know what they say, do what you love.
Yeah, they say that.
Exactly.
They sure do.
So you kind of touched on your current role at Temple Israel. We know you work with the lovely Jewish youth and YFD, Youth Federation of Temple Israel, for those who don't know. Could you tell us a bit more about your educational philosophy and how you teach these Jewish young teens about their religion?
Yeah, well, you know, of course, having one of my prime, most brilliant students interviewing me today, you know, you understand, having traveled with all over the world with me and having sort of seen the way that we work. And Judaism isn't something that I really think at this point in this day and age that teens are able to sit down and study in a yeshiva by learning out of books and having lectures and classrooms. That for me, my approach has always been experiencing Judaism and learning how to live values in the world. And so, you know, I believe in experiential Judaism. So for me, like, the best way to educate somebody is while we're hiking through the forest in Israel, or while we're, you know, walking arm in arm through Auschwitz and having the experience of being Jewish in the world and learning based on how that makes you feel, what's important to you, you know, looking around and seeing what's going on and figuring out how our values and our tradition and our, like, our families and our, you know, being part of this long chain that reaches back 1,000 years influences the way we see the world. I like to think of Judaism as like a, you know, like almost like a pair of glasses. When you put on these glasses, you sort of see the world in that way. And these are the lenses by which we see everything. And so I don't think you can do that by sitting in a classroom. So for me, I'm a really big fan of getting our hands dirty, working with people, doing social justice work, like showing how Jewish values impact the way we live our lives, not just studying how Judaism sort of came to this moment.
And might I add, it's been 4 years since we went to Europe, which is crazy.
It's just coming up on my time hop this week. But really, it's not like pictures of things, it's pictures of what we were eating, which is obviously another way to experience the world that I believe is very important.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. It's so interesting to hear you talk a little bit about this experiential component to education and yeah, like how experiencing Judaism is a way to understand it in for teens specifically. But I also think, like, more and more, like, young adults and even maybe, like, you know, children's Jewish education is basically entirely experiential. But are you noticing any kind of, like, changes or changing ways in Jewish education or how educators teach Judaism?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's actually a brilliant moment for this conversation. COVID really, like, completely upended, you know, the last 70 years of Jewish education. It used to be that you had a kid, the kid turned 5, you put the kid in Sunday school, the kid did Sunday school, the kid turned 13, they had a bar mitzvah, you know, like this whole thing that has always existed since the beginning of, you know, our Jewish American experience. But with COVID, we've had to really, like, throw it all in the trash. And what's so interesting is that I just got off the phone. Actually, we have our clergy meeting every Tuesday with our big team. And we're not putting it back. Like, we're not going back to the way things were, because things weren't great and it wasn't working well. And so we're thinking of small groups and doing experiential family oriented programming, teaching families how to sort of live through that Jewish lens instead of parents, you know, sort of dropping their kids off and assuming that a teacher in an hour a week or 30 minutes a week or not showing up because they have soccer is going to lead their child to understand the world in a Jewish way. So we are in the middle of this, like, really amazing reckoning with Jewish education. And I will keep you updated. And if you have any ideas, you'll let us know.
We're all amazing. About innovation here at the Weekly Kvetch.
I'm very interested in experiential education, and I'm in a master's program right now about it. So that's why I ask, because I think that Jewish education has seen a huge change. And also, what does it look like in a quote unquote post COVID world, even though that's not happening anytime soon, I think. So still being optimistic, but it's not going to go away in 2 months.
But like, to that point, we have now taken Hebrew out of the classroom. Like, people were working one-on-one, and in a post-COVID world, like, can you imagine if 3 families got together on a Sunday afternoon with a Hebrew teacher and, like, studied outside under a tree? Like, it's idyllic. And it's how much more would a kid absorb from building community with kids in his neighborhood than sitting in a classroom with kids he sees once a month? It's just, there's so many opportunities now that people were too afraid to, like, shake up before. And now nobody's afraid and everybody is excited about the future. And that's, like, one silver lining of having our entire world come crashing down on us, you know, in a heartbeat.
Totally. And I mean, I think at the same time too, it takes the same amount of money or resources to have one Hebrew teacher teach for so many hours than it does, you know, than it would for that one Hebrew teacher to go sit under a tree with three families and teach Hebrew. Maybe it's a little bit more money, but like the impact is bigger. Which is, I love that. That's awesome. Or,
and also the fact that, I mean, we don't have to talk about Jewish education the whole time, but the, you know, the idea that to get really excellent, high quality teachers means paying people a full-time salary. And so to be able to take four Hebrew teachers and have them be full-time instead of paying them $20 an hour or 40, whatever it is, $40 an hour for 5 hours a week, you get a completely different A, level of teacher, and B, incentive for brilliant young minds to study, to become Jewish studies, Hebrew teachers, you know, and take that seriously as a real job option.
Absolutely. That's awesome. In sort of pivoting a little bit, we wrote this question and we wrote it to say inspiration is a fun word. How do you inspire congregants and also members of the community to kind of like make a commitment to Judaism, or how do you think about furthering that commitment?
So, you know, when I mentioned earlier this idea that I wanted to be one person, that I felt like it was really important to my family, my own sense of well-being to like not go and be one person here and be another person somewhere else. You know, we are absolutely, I don't want to say blessed, I hate that, but like we are so lucky to live in the type of community that we live in here, in that I think that the way that I inspire people to be invested in Judaism is to build a freaking amazing Jewish community that puts its money where its mouth is and takes care of each other. So like I want to create a system in which somebody who chooses to be part of the community feels loved and accepted and supported and valued. And if I can do that successfully, then I don't have to work very hard to get people to come in, because it's something that is incredibly special and incredibly sacred and allows them to live their lives within a village. And I don't think we have very many villages anymore. And that's my favorite thing about our community and about Judaism in general, is that I feel like we are one really big village. And if I can make the village really, 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 really amazing and live up to everything we say the village is going to be, then people will commit to living a Jewish life within the village.
Well, if I could say one thing, the village that you created when I was back in high school was probably one of the reasons why I wanted to join Gboard and Eboard. So for Yifty. I appreciate it a lot. Speaking of Yifty and other things, I'm sure you have plenty of amazing stories from working at Temple Israel. I can think of some personally from Yifty. What's a memory or two that sticks out from your time being at Temple Israel?
You know, one of my favorite memories, I want to speak to this idea of a village and the idea that that if you do it right, you create a pathway for people to build an identity in a really sacred way. And one of my favorite memories was when Zach and I were, you know, just doing our thing and running the youth group and working with kids, and Parkland happened. Sophie, were you there for that?
No, I was.
You were in college.
Yeah.
Well, Parkland, so there's the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas. And we looked at each other and we were like, this is not acceptable. And this is a moment, an incredibly powerful, teachable moment for kids. And we said, like, if we could dream and break open the barriers, like what would we do? And so within like an hour, we had donors who were willing, conservative donors, mind you, who were willing to cover the cost of 12 kids to go to the rally. We knew the rally was going to happen when they announced March for Our Lives. And we said, we're going to get 12 kids. We're going to go. We're going to experience this. We're going to be there on the ground. We're going to do some teaching around it. And we put out a call and we said, if you want to come with us, you have 1 hour to tell us you want to come. And within 1 hour, we had 50 kids signed up. And the donor said, however many kids you want to bring, we'll cover the cost. And we took, and then beforehand, we organized a Zoom meeting before Zoom was even cool with some of the Jewish survivors of the shooting who were, you know, whose friends were killed. And we organized this unbelievable program. But more than I don't want to like sit here and brag about the program. The fact that in a day we raised $10,000 to bring kids to this march. parents were involved, kids were involved. They trusted us to go and take, you know, take their kids and have this experience. And then all of these kids who came, their lives were completely transformed by the experience. They got to meet with the kids in person who were there running the march. I mean, it was transformational. And I really like that really sticks with me as like one of these transformational moments that can come from a strong community that supports Jewish values and how to like put values into action. So that's one of the best, really great one.
Amazing. I remember seeing the photos from there and wishing that I was still in high school for just like 1 second and be like, oh, I wish I could have gone.
We brought a bunch of college students too, because people freaked out that it was only for high school, and a bunch of students, alumni came and they staffed, you know, we let them staff the trip.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sophie, unfortunately, you know, gun violence is still obviously a pervasive and horrendous American thing happening right now. So I'll bring you to the next one.
Awesome. Thanks.
Just to wrap up, is there anything else, Reb Jen, that we didn't get to that you'd like to share, or anything you'd like to plug or anything like that?
I would just like to plug being connected to the Jewish community. And I think that you two are doing amazing work. And I think that, you know, we can't expect anybody to do the work for us, and that we have to be willing, those of us who care about creating this kind of a safe and loving way in which to move in the world, have to be willing to get our hands dirty. And so thanks for getting your hands dirty.
Of course.
And thank you. Great. Well, thank you, Reb Jen. We will make sure that we get this interview to you and in our podcast. And for those who are interested in more of the work of Temple Israel of West Bloomfield, we'll make sure we include some info about the temple and the synagogue and all of that. So thank you to everyone. Thanks to all. And we'll pass it back to Jake.
Thank you for that interview. That was a very wonderful interview. Good job, Sophie and Nate. Thank you. Now we're going to move on to my favorite portion of the podcast, the Jake rant. So I think it's very important to mention, a couple weeks ago, we all fetched about caffeine, and I said, word by word, I don't drink coffee. Now, flashback to today, flashback to a couple weeks ago, I went to like Starbucks, and I got a Frappuccino, and it had coffee in it, and I, you know, normally I'd be like, ugh, because I get the caramel one, I like that caramel one. But I usually get it without the coffee, and I got it with the coffee, and I was like, whoa, all right, hold on a second. Why does this taste so good? And then I went to Tim Hortons, and my girlfriend, she told me that there was like an ice cap with Oreos in it. And yes, Sophie said, so good. I tried it, and I was like, oh, my, it tastes like a milkshake, but caffeinated. It's incredible. So I've been drinking those nonstop. I've been moving. I've been jamming. I haven't had coffee this morning, but I'm going to get some coffee later. I'm very excited. But coffee, here's the thing. You know, people, they're like, you don't like coffee? Grow up. I don't agree with that necessarily. I think that coffee is very, it's an acquired taste. I had to have it a lot of different times for me to start to like the taste. I don't, you know, I'm not a fan of, I've never enjoyed a tiramisu, which is like the coffee dessert. But now I might give it a try, because honestly, coffee, pretty good. I remember in the movie
Meet the Robinsons?
Meet the Robinsons. Yeah, it is Meet the Robinsons. One of the people, she's like caffeine patches that are like little coffee things just to get you going. I don't know why I said that. I thought it was important to note. But yeah, I mean, I'm usually pretty energetic on my own, but I realize that I'm usually at like an 8 out of 10, but I realize I could be like a 15 out of 10 with coffee. So coffee has gotten me going through the day. I don't drink like the black coffee. It has to be like super sweet Oreos or caramel, or, you know, I see those people on TikTok where they put a, like they make their own iced coffee. It always looks really, really good. And cause they have things I like in it. They have caramel, they have, is it Sophie? Are you, what kind of coffee do you have today?
Today I have a medium Dunkin' cold brew with almond milk. I got the sweet foam on top, which is essentially just whipped cream, but I don't know. It makes it better. It's technically, oh, and caramel. It's technically the Charlie drink, but I don't get the Charlie drink because she gets whole milk and
You get almond
milk. If you're Jewish too and you're listening, you know us Jews can't process dairy that well. So
I like to think I can, but really deep down,
I can't.
Like, who am I kidding? Like, but honestly, it's good. I mean, I really like it. Like I said, it has to be like the sweetie sweet ones. I mean, coffee. I'm related to people. We're the Kaufmans. So shout out to the Kaufmans. I don't know if they listen, but shout out to you, Kaufmans. In conclusion, coffee, kind of good. If you listen to that episode, I'm not going to say which one it is. You're going to have to listen to all of them, I guess, to find the one which we talk about caffeine. Which one is it? Only I know, and I don't even remember. But coffee, I'm gonna end my thing by saying coffee, yummy. I like it now with caramel and with Oreos. And if it's a Charlie, I went to Starbucks and they had like that new like oat, like it was like
the oat milk,
some kind of shaken like oaty thing. I didn't like it at all. I should stick with my Frappuccinos and my ice caps and all that. So in conclusion, coffee, good. If you see me on the street, buy me Tim Hortons Oreo ice cap. Thank you. And now we are going to move on to our 20-second tour portion. So let's hear it.
It's time for 20-second Torah.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Jenna Stein Turo, and this is 20-second Torah. This week's Parsha is Shmini, in which Aaron the high priest prepares sacrifices on behalf of the Israelites. The priest makes sacrifices that symbolically atone for the sins of the people. Today, we don't do sacrifices, so everyone must take personal responsibility for their wrongdoings. We can actively work on positive, impactful behavior rather than damaging or offensive words and actions. How do you take responsibility when you make a mistake or offend someone?
Thank you for our 20-second tour portion. It was very, very good. All right, so even though, like I said, Nate's doing mountain yoga with goats, mountain goats with yoga or whatever, it's his favorite portion of the podcast. It is the one, the only L'chaim of the week. So in case you are unfamiliar with the L'chaim of the week, the way in which it works is that we give like a shout out to something that we're looking forward to in the coming week, something good that happened in the past week. You know, just we're just giving a toast to something. So I'll go first. This one is coming out this Friday, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this Friday, actually, the day that this comes out is going to be my very, very last improv show. I'm very sad about this. I've spent 4 years doing improv, and now it's going to be my last show. So if you want to watch it, look up the Royal Improv Players on Facebook and find our event. So that's a little plug, but I'm going to be wearing a suit and a tie. All the seniors, we dress up. It'll be a very, very fun night. That starts at 9:00. So if you want to watch it, you want to support me, come do that. That would mean a lot to me. All right. And Sophie, what's your L'chaim of the week?
What am I excited for? I'm excited for, you know, I'm excited for the weekend. Yep. You know, the weekend's always a good time.
Good.
My sister's birthday was this past week, so
oh my gosh, happy birthday to your sister.
Thank you. Yeah. And then
awesome. Well, shout out to the weekend, shout out to Shabbat. It'll be a good weekend. It's supposed to be really beautiful, I think.
Yes.
I don't know, I didn't look at it. So get outside if you haven't gotten outside in a couple days. Go for a run, go for a walk. It's gonna be really, really warm today. Oh my goodness, supposed to be in the 77. Wow. Oh my God, I might have to go for a swim in the Red Cedar River.
God.
That's our podcast for today. Thank you for tuning in. It is always a pleasure. I still remain your host, Jake the Snake Rubin, or just Jake Rubin. I still remain your host, Jake Rubin. And I hope that you have a wonderful Shabbat. I hope that the matzah meal that you did for 8 days. I hope that you enjoyed breaking it. I hope that you enjoy eating your bread. It is always a pleasure. Thank you for listening to the Weekly Fetch. Goodbye and good night.
And that's our show. Thanks for kvetching with us this week. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review and call a friend to tell them you love them. The Weekly Kvetch is hosted by me, Jake Rubin, and our executive producers are Sophie Dwoskin and Nate Strauss. This podcast is a production of MSU Hillel. Yalla bye, my friends.
Theme music produced by Peter Cooley.